This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to another episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical.
Practical.
Okay. So my question is, are you frightened? Are you scared as a parent?
I think we're all scared to a certain extent. I remember when our oldest was a baby.
Yeah.
For crying out loud, I was scared to change his diaper. I didn't know what to do. I was afraid he wasn't growing right. I was afraid I wasn't feeding him enough. I was pretty scared.
Yeah.
But you grow into it. You realize that they're not as fragile as you thought. And everything's going to be okay. And they pretty much survive. And you get past that in your parenting, hopefully.
Well, but, you know, I question sometimes whether everybody does get past it. I think it changes.
True.
Because, you know, there's some things, it's just kind of anecdotal sometimes. But then there's also some research that indicates that maybe as a generation, we as parents are not handling this very well. We take normal concern, good, prudent, wise parental concern, and we let it become a phobia or something that we become fearful.
Well, you know, I don't even think we realize we're doing it. You know, I look around though, and things have changed a lot since we were kids, and even more since our parents were kids.
Well, I want to share some statistics. I love statistics. And the study came out, very interesting thing. It was published in the magazine Child Development just a month or two ago. A researcher by the name of Jean Twinge and her collaborator, I forget his full name, but anyway, she was the lead researcher. The article was on the decline of adult activities among adolescents. Now, that was kind of it's a technical sort of mouthful thing, but she and her research team looked at a whole bunch of nationwide studies of over 8 million students.
Okay.
Now, that's a significant number, okay?
Yeah, I remember reading studies when I was in graduate school that had 6 students.
Yeah, okay. This sample size on this study was 8.4 million students over 4 generations. So she was able to kind of group the data and say, this is what the baby boomers were like when they were students. This is what Generation X, this is what millennials are like. And start to compare what, you know, she kind of asked the question, what are some traditional behaviors and activities that we associate with grown-ups that adolescents begin doing?
Now, you know, let's clarify a bit, though, because when people hear adult activities, they think like adult bookstores. That's not what we're talking about.
Well, I know, but grown-up sounds a little, but that's really what it is.
It's grown-up.
It's grown-up activities, okay? And so she was looking at some of those things, like, for example, how about take something really simple that we all did in high school, right? Driver's license. When did you get your driver's license?
The day I turned 16.
I was out of town. I think I was a week late.
Yes.
But I mean, it was, we were ready to get a driver's license. That was a big deal. You know what? In the baby boomers generation, in our generation, high school seniors, they said 90% of high school seniors had their driver's license.
Okay, we're right on the verge.
We're like the trailing edge of the baby boomers. I know.
At the beginning of Generation X, right?
Yeah. Okay. Right. So we're late boomers. How's that?
Okay.
Okay, but anyway, the people that were in our class in high school, 90% of them, when they were seniors, had their driver's license by that time. Do you want to know what it is now, nationwide?
What?
Do you know what it is? Okay, nationwide, only 73%. Now, that's still a majority. That means 1 out of 4 high school seniors doesn't know how to drive yet.
Wow.
Can you get your head around that? I mean, I could.
Wow.
That
was pretty much unthinkable. When I was a kid, all of us were dying to get our licenses the day we turned 16.
Okay. Or how about work? Okay.
Wait, I want to say one more thing about that.
Yeah.
I had a friend who lived in Mississippi, and she got her driver's license when she turned 14.
Laws are different from state to state.
Well, you know, but that was kind of surprising even to me back then, but now that's unthinkable.
Well, I don't think you can do it now because of some federal laws that came into effect. But just the, I mean, to go from 90% down to something like 74% or was 73%, that's a big change. All right. How about working? Okay, working for pay. Now, I know that your family had a business, and so you were working in the business.
I worked.
You worked a lot.
I really worked.
And I understand that.
But, Mom and I were talking about that today, and I was telling her how much I learned and what a blessing it was to me.
Yeah.
How much I learned working in their business.
Now, see, I looked at it, and I thought, hey, if I get a job, then I will have money. I will have money of my own that I can spend, and I get to do grown-up thing like go, you know, work. And so that was a big thing. You know, 3/4 of high school seniors in our generation, in our class, 3/4 of them had a job at one time or another, had worked for pay somewhere.
And, you know, I suspect that there's a good number like me.
Right.
Who didn't work. You know, I didn't work for pay, but I sure worked. I worked in my family business. And I bet that a lot of those people that aren't counting that number were working on their family farms and in their family businesses.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I didn't know anybody that didn't work.
Okay. How about this current generation? What percentage of the current generation do you think have ever worked for pay?
I don't know. How many?
Just over half.
Really?
55%. That means 45% of current high school seniors have never worked for pay. I mean, never cut grass, never babysat, never flipped hamburgers. They've never worked for pay.
Boy, they're in for an adjustment.
Yeah, seriously. And how about, well... Now, I won't take that statistic. There's another thing. That's another controversy. But, I mean, I think those two things are significant right there. And, you know, this is something that Senator Ben Sasse's book, The Vanishing American Adult, he talks about this. He talks about this a lot in his experience as a college president about young people who just weren't ready to step up to the plate. That's what he saw of the incoming freshmen. Well, you know, something that I read also in another journal that I've seen this repeatedly, psychiatrists and psychologists and counselors are saying, what are the hallmarks of the current generation of young adults? You know, people talk about, oh, they're narcissistic. And, well, okay. I mean, that's another discussion. But one of the things that keeps coming up is they said they are very anxious people. I mean, like clinical anxiety, like paralysis level anxiety is a very common thing in a current generation. You know what they think is what's causing that?
What?
Their parents.
Wow.
They think it's really because their parents have stepped in so often to try to rescue them or to direct them or to take over that they get to college, they get off on their own, and they're paralyzed. They feel like, I can't make a decision without direction from my parents. I can't make a career move or choose an apartment or do anything. They're just adrift because they feel like all their young adult lives, their parents were always stepping in to fix things, to take over things. And you know, I think most of the time it's out of love. I think most of the time it's love and concern and desire that they want to help. And yet it seems that the parents' concern has interfered with their young people growing up.
You know, I wonder how we made the observation in our book, Raising Real Men, that people's attitude towards children's physical safety had changed since we were young and since our parents were young, especially, that people seemed to be unconcerned about their kids' spiritual development, about their character development, but let a child ride down the street on a bike without a helmet and people were calling social services.
Without a helmet?
Right.
Are you serious?
And, you know, I rode all over town without a helmet. All over.
Wow.
And, you know, it seemed to be that as they gave up the ground of worrying about their character and their spiritual stuff, they focused on their physical safety. You know, it's almost like people have ceased to trust God with their kids.
Ooh. Well.
Even Christians. You know, it's like we don't really believe that God can lead our kids the way he's led us.
Yeah, it's like we've forgotten what it was like when we were young believers, when we were young adults, and we were learning to listen to God's direction, listen to the Holy Spirit, look into the Bible to try to gain insight into things that somehow we think, yeah, but, you know, you don't understand. My kids are so young. I mean, they're only 22. They can't make these serious life-changing decisions like that.
But their parents had been married 2 years when they were 22.
You know, this is a thing, okay? I think what it really is, I think when it really boils down, it comes to parenting out of fear. And that takes a lot of different forms. But before I go into, you know, what do I think of fear-based parenting, let's talk about things that are not.
Okay.
I mean, don't you think there's room for parents to be concerned?
Oh, yeah. You know, you teach your children not to touch the hot stove.
Yeah.
That's not fearful. That's just right. Wise. You teach them to not run out into the street and play.
Right.
You
teach them to be very skeptical of strangers that walk up to them out in public and not to share certain things on social media. I mean, that's not fear. That's prudence. That's wisdom. You know, it's not fear to tell your child, you know what, there is a God who sees everything, and all of us have sinned, and all of us are guilty in his eyes, and we desperately need a savior. That's not, you know, that's not fear.
That's not fear-mongering.
That is prudence.
That's reality.
That's wisdom. That's our greatest need. But when normal caution, normal prudence, I think, starts to become a fear, it starts to interfere. It starts to intervene in the normal process of our kids growing up. It goes from like, okay, you don't let your 3-year-old play with sharp objects in the kitchen to like we've had parents tell us, gee, I'm not too sure about giving my 12-year-old a pocket knife. He might cut himself.
Well, honey, I had somebody tell me that about their 14-year-old.
Yeah.
And you know, what got me?
Uh-huh.
Is these are the same folks that are buying G.A. Henney novels from us, where his 14-year-old heroes are off at battle serving as somebody's squire and, you know, doing things that are really life-threatening, and they're afraid for their kids to have a pocket knife?
Okay, well, look, sailing with Sir Francis Drake is not like driving on the freeway. You've got to understand, rush hour is a dangerous thing.
It's not as dangerous as sailing with Sir Francis Drake. I'm sorry.
I mean, honestly.
Well, you know, it drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the same people who read these heroic stories of the Covenanters and the J. Henney heroes and all these heroes from the past are treating their kids like their kids when they're in their 20s.
And that is not doing them a service, and it's not preparing them to work in the kingdom of God.
No, it's not.
Honestly, it's not preparing them for service in God's army. And, you know, that's something we just need to be aware of, I think, and be cautious, because it's all motivated by love for that child. We don't want that child to get hurt. We don't want them to stumble. We don't want them to make the same stupid mistakes that we made when we were teenagers.
Well, and some of the parents that I think have been the most guilty of this.
Yeah.
Are people who genuinely love Jesus. They genuinely love their children.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just gotten things out of balance. You know, they were ungodly when they were young, and they're so terrified their kids are going to make those same decisions, they don't let them make decisions. But you know, it's not even within the church, just within the church. We're seeing this as a culture.
Yeah. And you know, the term helicopter parent comes up eventually, and that's a very real thing. And it's a term, actually, that term has been around for about 10 years. I was surprised it was that old, but it's been talked about in the literature for quite a few years.
Oh, longer than that, baby. Yeah. I remember hearing somebody say it in 2005.
Okay. Well.
So, you know, yeah, that, and it was a thing by then.
Yeah.
This isn't something new, but it has gotten to ridiculous proportions because we're, you know. When I was a kid, someone who was a helicopter parent might call their kids every day.
Mm-hmm.
Now their kids have never left home.
And I tell you, one of the saddest things that I'm seeing as I've talked to some of these young adults is that they have adopted their parents' fears. They have embraced their parents' fears and just believe, I'm not able. It's too dangerous. Well, it's too big a risk.
Let's talk about that more in just a minute, because we need to take a station break.
Well, let's do. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about what? What do we wish to talk about?
We want to talk about the fact that we have some incredible, awesome things for these people in our store. Because it is, we're recording this at the Christmas shopping season.
Yeah.
And we have so many cool things out there that you can give your kids and feel good about it. Like those G.A. Henney novels we were just talking about.
We got a whole bunch of great audiobooks that we've recorded that we put out there that talk about heroism. They talk about courage. They talk about persistence and diligence. And, you know, also things like the softer skills, like gratitude, like gentleness.
Compassion.
Oh, man.
And so, yeah, we've got stuff that will inspire your kids. We've got things that they'll think are great fun. We got stuff they'll do both, like our craft kits for teens, where they can build chainmail. They can learn calligraphy.
Right.
They can learn a real adult skill. Mm-hmm. And have a lot of fun doing it. So anyway, go to raisingrealmen.com/shop because when you shop in our store, then you support our ministry.
Okay. So we appreciate that. Now, so we're talking about fear-based parenting. Parenting that is motivated by fear and alarm and anxiety that your kids might mess up, might get hurt in some way.
Okay. So what we're seeing.
Yes.
Just to recap, what we're seeing is parents that are not allowing, much less encouraging, their kids to take on adult responsibilities, to get jobs, start businesses, to move out, to go to higher education if that's what that child is bent toward,
yeah,
to find a mate, to drive a car, to all these other things. Instead, they're so scared their kids are going to make a mistake that they are crippling their kids.
And, you know, it's...
And
okay.
They don't mean to. These are good parents who want to do right for their kids. But I talked to a young woman just recently who is in her 30s.
Yeah.
And we were talking about, you know, her role in her birth family.
Yeah.
And she expressed to me something that just concerned me so much, Al. We were talking about how the whole congregation is told to honor their parents.
Right.
But in the New Testament, it says that children should obey their parents and how there's a subtle difference there.
Right.
And this young woman expressed concern. She said, well, you know, but when does that really apply? When am I really considered an adult? Because I still live in my parents' house. And so I should still be obeying them, shouldn't I? And it really concerned me that she did not consider herself an adult in her 30s. And I thought, when does she become an adult? What if she's 60 and still living with her elderly mom and she's making all the decisions and writing all the checks and her mom is unable to take care of things. She's elderly. Mm-hmm. Is she still not an adult?
Yeah. And that's, I assume that you made the distinction between, being in, you know, utter subjection and under the control of your parents versus I'm living in their house. I'm going to abide by their wishes because I'm kind of a guest at this point.
Yeah, we talked about that it's appropriate to obey the household rules.
Right.
You know, we own the house. We've had adult kids at various times here.
Right.
We have household rules. Everybody follows them. You and I follow them.
Right. Right.
But she really did not believe that she could call herself an adult.
She didn't feel like she was a grown-up.
Until she was married. And living in her own household. And I felt really sorry for her because that's not a healthy position to be in.
No. And I would say by your 30s, I would think, yeah, that you should be past that feeling. That is definitely something, you know, to be cautious about. And I think that we parents sometimes are guilty when we have a large family in particular, I think, that first child gets up to 8 or 10 years old and we set some rules in place because we're dealing with this 8 or 10 year old. And then, you know, the next child comes along, they hit 8 or 10 and we reemphasize those rules. And then the next child, 8 or 10, we emphasize those rules. So, you know, down to fourth or fifth child, we're still teaching those rules. And we don't realize that standing behind us now is an 18 or 19 year old who hasn't gotten any further update in expectations and aspirations and goals, and you know, this is what you should be doing now, which is different than when you were in the fifth grade.
Yeah, it's easy to do that. And I know we have handled our younger children differently than we did our first. I think though it's important for us all to look around and to look back on ourselves, look back on maybe if you didn't handle those ages well,
yeah.
Look at other people. You know, when you and I were in college, we were both Christians. Mm-hmm. We were serious about doing right, about following the Lord. We had friends that were guys and friends that were girls, and you know, no sin. Nobody in our community of Christians was in any kind of flagrant sin.
No.
You know, they were trying to follow Jesus. And I think it's kind of heartbreaking that we have young people, young adults who are in their mid to late 20s, some of them I've talked to, 30s,
yeah.
that don't feel capable of standing on their own.
Yeah. You know, I think of one that we talked with that we knew the family pretty well, whose parents just really, really sat on him until he was in his mid-20s. I mean, where he went to school, what his aspirations for college were, what his aspirations for a career. And finally, he sat him down and he said, look, you need to understand something. I am not you. And when you were my age, yes, you were ungodly. You were running from God. You needed more, you know, somebody to rein you in. But you trained me differently. And that's something I think sometimes we forget. We look back at our own baggage and we think, oh, being a teenager was terrible. I was in such trouble. And we don't realize, well, we trained our children differently. We raised them up with a different character. And God put a different spirit into them. And praise God, at 18, they're more mature than we were when we were 18 or maybe 24.
Yeah.
And so, but we got to recognize that. We got to be willing to say, hey, you know, I'm dealing with a different person than the one that I was.
Yes.
And it's probably, it's a very good thing. You know, I think we parents need to recognize we need to be encouraging our young people to step up and to do some stuff.
Yes.
To go, so, you know, we had, and I won't mention any names, but we did have one son who's very responsible, who looked around and said, you know what? It is a dangerous thing to be out on the highway, you know, traveling at high speeds with all of this heavy vehicle around me. I'm not sure if I'm confident enough to do that. And we basically said, baloney, study that book. We're going to go get your driver's license. We need your help. I mean, we pushed him a little bit because, no, we're not going to let him coast on this. You know, I see things like I hear folks who said, well, I don't want my kids exposed to all that junk on the internet until they're at least in their 20s, maybe 21 or later. And you think, well, you know what? How are you going to even apply for a job? How are you going to apply for college? So much of it's done online now. I mean, that's just basic. That's not quite to the level of reading, but it's a functional skill that's just about inescapable and irreplaceable.
It's a life skill.
It's something that, And you know what? We need to be introducing our young people to the internet while they're in their teens, while they're at home, and we can coach them.
We can supervise them. We can teach them how to avoid trouble. You know, everyone needs to learn how to use the internet like a Christian, how to drive, how to swim, you know, how to pay bills, how to handle their finances. Those are just life skills that every single adult needs, and sooner rather than later.
Can I suggest another one? This is we can have hours on this one thing.
Okay, sure.
I think we need to learn to deal with a member of the opposite sex without totally freaking out.
Truth.
You know, because I have seen that, and I've seen it. Guys and girls.
Well, I talked to a young man recently. He was 26 or 27.
Yeah.
And he was very wistful. He really wished he was married. He was interested in being married. But he confessed. He said, I said, well, why don't you make friends with the girls that you are acquainted with?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, I'm afraid to do that. What if I lead him on? What if I give him the wrong idea? Or what if I make him think I'm more interested than I am? And he was paralyzed by this fear that he was going to lead them into sin when his intentions were purely honorable.
But yeah, it's like he didn't have the perspective to say that, hey, there's a long way between hello, my name is, and will you marry me and live as my mate for life? There's a long process. There's a lot of steps there. And asking somebody to go share a cup of coffee is not, you're not putting anybody at risk at that point.
Shouldn't be.
No, but you know, I saw that we've had, you know, some of our sons picked up contra dancing as a pastime.
Yes.
Here, you know, which is like it's like square dancing,
like English country dancing.
Yeah, it's big pattern dancing, you know, and all that kind of thing, and just the athletic nature of the dancing, I think took the edge off some of that interaction for them to say that, hey, you know, I'm not gonna fall into flaming sin because I linked elbows with a with a girl in a dance somewhere.
Yes.
You know, and I think that that's an important thing too, because when we get out in the work world, we may be working with members of the opposite sex.
Yes.
Single members of the opposite sex, and we may be expected to, like, talk to them sometimes without a chaperone. And that's normal, and adults can do this without sin. But we need to be able to conceptualize this so that we don't, you know, burst into flame or something.
It's a life skill. And I just, the sad part of parenting out of fear is that we keep our kids from stepping up and doing the things that God is calling them to do. And we don't get to see the amazing things God can do in their lives if we're so afraid we don't let them do anything.
And we are living in a spirit of fear, and God has not given us a spirit of fear.
And, you know, and I won't say that I haven't been concerned, even alarmed at different times with when our kids have been away, our adult kids. You know, there are times when we've had a child in China or England where I felt like, you're sick, I want to come give you a hug, I'm worried about you. Or, you know, a child who was heartbroken, you know, over a situation in a different state, and I couldn't go to them.
You just want to step in and fix things.
I want to make it all better, but the fact that I wasn't there to make it all better meant that they had to go to the Lord, and they had to seek His face and His comfort. They had to rely on Him, and they grew in the Lord. Now, they still talked to Mama and Dad and sought our advice.
Yeah, see, honor your father and your mother. Refer to that. Yeah.
But, and they sought our advice, but they had to learn to rely on Jesus. And, you know, I want my children to walk with God. You know, one of the reasons we started this whole thing with Christian parenting and homeschooling and trying to disciple our kids is we wanted them to be godly men and women. We wanted them to be warriors for Christ. Y'all, if your child, your young adult who's in his 20s, cannot do the basic functions of adulthood as well as your average worldling or pothead out there, they're certainly not a warrior for Christ.
Yeah. And related to that is that question, like the young woman in her 30s that you talked to. You know, we do need to ask ourselves, well, if we don't think that our young people are ready to be capable, independent, even if they're inexperienced, okay, they're inexperienced, that's a fact. But if they're not ready to step up and to be an adult and to take, to make decisions and to face consequences, if they're not ready at 18, when do you think they're going to be ready? Is it going to be when they're 21? Will it be when they hit 25? Maybe when they're 30? Maybe not until they get married? You know, I think, frankly, some of these parents I talk to, I think they drift into this situation and they don't know how to say, whoa, wait a minute, you're 26. Where did I turn wrong? Where did I drop the ball on this? You need to be, you know.
And marriage does not immediately confer maturity on you.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. And turning 18 does not suddenly make you wise.
No.
But
there needs to be movement into independent maturity.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about that on the blog this week. The spiritual aspect of it, that at some point, young people have got to decide that they are going to pursue the Lord for themselves, that they're going to seek out Christian friends, they're going to seek out Christian teaching, that it's their job, not their parents' job.
And likewise, parents are going to have to say, all right, look, I'm not going to wake you up anymore. You know, I'm not going to force you to go. I'm going to allow you to make your own choice on this and say, hey, you know what? Your 5, 6, and 8-year-old younger siblings, they're going to church as always because they are responsible to me, but you're an adult and you need to make your own choice on this. And if you want to ride with us, great. If you are going to take your own car, that's fine, whatever, but it's not my responsibility any longer. It's your responsibility. We need to be willing to give our kids, to bless our kids with the responsibility, because after all, haven't we trained them to do that? And that's a thing to ask ourselves. If we get our young people to adult ages and we feel like they're not ready yet, who's been training them?
Yeah.
Who's been preparing them for this? Let's be really, really bluntly honest with ourselves.
And, you know, if they're not if your adult children are not wanting to seek the Lord on their own, if they're not willing to make right decisions, the answer is not to step on them, but maybe to let them move out, to help them move out.
Yeah.
Because they need to be adults. They need to decide for themselves who they'll serve. Now, do I want my kids to serve Jesus? You better believe it. Am I going to always tell them that? You better believe it. But there comes a time when they're not children anymore. And you know what? The cool thing is, we have seen amazing things from our adult kids. They're walking with the Lord. They're serving Him. They're serving Him in different ways and places and jobs and ministries. And it's amazing what God has done in their lives.
And some of them didn't actually step up until we gave them the opportunity and the expectation. You know, we'd said, okay, look, this is on you now. This is not me. You're not doing this because I'm telling you to. I'm advising you, but you're going to make your own choice and you're going to live with your own choice. And that's that. And it's been interesting because sometimes there's almost an audible click when their brain engages and saying, wait a minute, hold on.
Well, now, this is up to me.
Oh, whoa, you just knocked the prop out. I've been pushing against you and you suddenly just stepped on one side and suddenly I've got to stand on my own. Whoa.
Yeah, I've got to answer for myself.
And that has been a very good thing. It's been a good thing.
You know, you can trust the Lord with your kids. You can trust Him with them just as surely as you trust Him with your own soul. And besides, you can't save your kids anyway.
No.
It's not our place. It's the Lord's place. Trust Him. Trust Him and see what happens. And I think it's really incredible what can happen. Our kids have amazed me. They are a joy. In fact, they're our best friends.
Yeah.
Our adult kids are our best friends.
So, we want to encourage you. Remember that God has not given us a spirit of fear. God's given us a spirit of faith and of a sound mind. And He will guide our children just the same as He can guide us. And, you know, recognize you've had years to prepare them. They've grown up under your discipleship. And probably they know a whole lot better than you ever expected they do. Just let's give them some space. Let's encourage them to step up and to take on the role of a young adult rather than keep holding them back and just making them the big children.
Yeah, because I tell you what, even if they're in your home still, if you are treating them as an adult and they are acting like an adult, that's a blessing. Mm. We've got an adult son who's been coming and helping us right now in our business, and wow, what a blessing he is to us.
All right. Well, look, I think we're about out of time, so we need to wrap this up. But we do thank you for joining us for this. You know, this is a self-supporting ministry in the sense of we have all sorts of great resources out at RaisingRealMen.com. And we have loyal sponsors and supporters like you that come out to Patreon.com/HalandMelanie. And they provide us with some monthly support that kind of keep things rolling here. And so we'd invite you to check that out, too, at Patreon.com/HalandMelanie. And come out to our store, RaisingRealMen.com. Well, look, I think that wraps it up for this week. So until next time, thanks for joining us. I'm Hal.
I'm Melanie.
Okay, bye everybody.
Bye y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.